Welcome to the ColbyCast, episode 204. Thank you for joining us. Today, Bonnie and I are joined by Jacob Imam, founder and vice president of finance at the College of St. Joseph the Worker in Steubenville, Ohio. This new college combines teachings in the Catholic intellectual tradition, leading to a bachelor's degree in Catholic studies, along with learning a trade and practicing this through an apprenticeship. Jacob takes us through the ideas that led to this new and exciting college, but in typical ColbyCast fashion, we have many interesting related discussions along the way. We hope that you'll enjoy the show.
Hi there, I'm Bonnie, Colby homeschooling mom of four lads and lasses, liturgical musician, popcorn, and podcast fanatic.
And this is Stephen, homeschooling father of five, and chief homeschooling officer for Colby Academy.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you today?
Doing very well. We're very excited about today's guest and our conversation. So I've been looking forward to this.
Me too. I've been hearing about this new school and the folks working on it for a while, and I'm excited to get our turn to visit with them today. We have with us Jacob Imam from the College of St. Joseph the Worker. Welcome to the ColbyCast.
Thank you so much.
We're very glad to have you here and to hear about all the work you've been putting into forming this new school in Steubenville, Ohio. Would you tell us a bit about yourself and your background to get us started?
Absolutely. So I'm a happy convert to Catholicism. I came into the church about 10 years ago or so, and I'm still an undergraduate at the time, and went off to grad school where I studied the reception of biblical material and then moved into the Islamic tradition and the Quran, and then moved over into Catholic social teaching, so political philosophy, and particularly I was in the philosophical theology program at Oxford, where I graduated. And right before in between the master's and the doctorate, I took a year off and worked for some time. And I was visiting during that year with a dear friend of mine who was working at admissions at a college in the South, and he was bemoaning more and more his choice in career path, finding that he was questioning the sales pitch that he was giving to prospective students and to prospective families, that the education that his college was offering was worthwhile in itself, and that also his college was a financially advantageous option for students. So that really got me thinking, you know, he's bemoaning his choice and career. I'm going to probably head off and become a professor one day. I don't want to feel as guilt-ridden as he does. Maybe is there another option? And so that has, that conversation has sent us into a few years of hard modeling and now building a new college, the College of St. Joseph the Worker, where students will simultaneously study the Catholic intellectual tradition to earn their BA degrees in Catholic studies, as well as training in the skilled trades, like carpentry, HVAC, electrical, plumbing, because our students get paid to train in the skilled trades. That offsets tuition costs and enables our students to graduate financially net positive instead of up to their eyeballs in debt. So that's what we've been up to here in Steubenville.
Well, just a few things, right? Just here and there.
Yeah.
It's a little kind of, okay. It sounds fantastic, and I want to hear a lot more about it. But would you say a bit more, though, about the intersection of theology and economics? Where you?
So much in our current day, we find that people say that Jesus wasn't interested in politics or that he wasn't interested in economics. And that is just so funny to me, because if you read through the Gospels, you read through sacred scripture, it's almost like he talks about it more than anything else. And then when he talks about the kingdom of God, he's not thinking about some ethereal fairyland, but something that he is actually charging us with founding, welcoming here on earth, in reality, actually physically, presently. And so when we have that charge, all of a sudden Christianity takes on a completely new light rather than something that's merely a belief or a set of beliefs that I hold privately. It is actually a new way of life, having beliefs so strong that they start to change our behavior. And we certainly see that happening throughout church history, like the social order of paganism that the Greco-Roman world instantiated is so different than the social order that the early Christians began to instantiate. There is a real conversion, a real repentance that had a political, had a series of political ramifications, and the economic one was a serious one. And so that's where I really enjoyed spending my academic hours getting into the weeds on. I'll let you direct me with how much further into those weeds you want me to go.
I'm curious to hear about it, and I can see how that is coming to bear on the work you're undertaking to found this new college. Some of the things you just mentioned came up in our conversation with Mike Aquilino we had here recently, and I know that he is a part of your endeavors there too. So tell us more about the inspiration for the College of St. Joseph the Worker. You've already mentioned some a bit. Would you tell us a bit more about the process of founding the school? What's that like to found a school like that?
Oh, you know what? It's far less glorious than you might imagine. I've been making this joke around the office that having gone through so many certification processes, being certified within our city, being certified with the IRS, being certified with the state of Ohio to be a certified college, being certified with the apprenticeship program, which is both state and federal, that we feel like we should be given honorary PhDs in bureaucracy at this point. So there's a lot of emails back and forth, letterheads that need to be changed. But, you know, beyond the paperwork, the actual building on the ground, the strategic selection of buildings, the exciting process of thinking about what workshops should look like, and then actually seeing them go from an idea in your mind to a reality in front of you is pretty thrilling, actually. So the best part about the college thus far in my estimation has been being able to work with my friends on it. I mean, we are, you know, it's a very rare opportunity that those whom you pray with at the same parish and enjoy family time with after work and, you know, with dinners is also the people that you spend 9 to 5 with as well. And that's a very rich opportunity that none of us really take lightly. And I think that enables us to be far more productive and more efficient than we otherwise would be, because there is a wonderful familiarity that we have. We know one another's weaknesses. We know one another's strengths. We can compensate or get out of the way for those. And that when, you know, building something new is very challenging, and to have that form of kind of amicable and fraternal camaraderie is a serious benefit. And so it's been a thrill on that side as well.
I was so excited to the first time I saw information about the College of St. Joseph the Worker. I was very excited because once upon a time I was going down that road of thinking about I was seeing some of the things that you talked about, that the current educational system is broken. It's become a burden on students. It's, you know, the value, like this mm-hmm. person was saying, the value of the education is questionable. And you know, I was fortunate in that I went to Thomas Aquinas College, which mm-hmm. that education for me was very valuable. Mm-hmm. And then I went and got a civil engineering degree in structures. So mm-hmm. I, you know, I kind of put my foot into both worlds, and then I ended up in Catholic education somehow. But I kept hearing, and people were recognizing that, like, this is a different age. You know, some of the calls from Vatican II, there was a call more for activity of the lay people. But seeing that sort of, you know, the expense of the model, and just wondering, why are we still doing things in this old way? and seeing something needed to be done. So I kept hearing, you'd start talking about this and people would get excited. Like, yes, we need to be more efficient and things. It sounds like those were some of the seeds that started, but then you ended up with hands-on trades in addition to good formation. Was that like an immediate thing, or did that kind of develop slowly over with your friends or the people that were involved? I'm just kind of curious how you took that particular.
It was almost immediate. There was one other idea. I can talk about that in a moment, but I think generally speaking, everybody knows this is one of these things where the king has no clothes, emperor has no clothes situations with modern American higher education, where we say the system is bunk, you know, the education's not worth it. It's no longer financially advantageous. And yet we still all send our children to college, you know, if we can, if we most of us have not made the radical step to let our convictions actually change our behavior on this one. And there's many reasons for that, and I sympathize greatly with them. But it does mean that we should be thinking about something else. And one of the reasons why we have been stuck in this situation where we are just worshiping and following this king, this naked king, who clearly cannot offer to us prosperity when he cannot even provide it for himself, is precisely that we don't know what we really want as a culture. We are confused. Our ends are all muddied together. We say things like, you know, what's the point of college? College is for getting a good job at the end. What's the purpose of a good job? What's to be able to have comfort and provide for your family? Well, what's that for? Well, I don't know. You know, it's like we struggle with the final end of things. And so we do a lot of good things along the way. We stumble from one good thing to the next. But the good is perverted profoundly because we're not clear in our vision, sadly. And as a result of this, you find many strange justifications for college, like the education is good in and of itself. And sometimes that's true. It's not always true, but it's sometimes that's true, that these are truths that free your mind to be able to free your entire life to be able to worship God well. And that is marvelous. But then we also say things like, well, this education will help you think better and then be able to get a better job. But that's just false. You know, there's some semblance of truth in it, but it's completely distracting to the true ends of the education in the liberal arts or the humanities, which is spiritual in nature. It's not practical in nature. It's not like you're studying, you know, coding, or you're not studying civil engineering, technical skills that are meant to be able to help you better participate in the marketplace today, which is good. But to be able to have this strange conflation between studying philosophy and getting money is just really off base, and we should not be making that error. So our decision to move to the skilled trades came about for many reasons. I'll get into those in a moment. But one of the things that is so wonderful, I think, about being able to provide both training in the humanities, in theology, as well as in the skilled trades, better enables those two pillars of education to be more truly themselves. That nobody's studying Catholic studies with us because they think that they're going to be able to make more money with it in the end of the day. They are doing it because they know that they will be able to see God's face more clearly, to pray to him more properly, and to love neighbor practically in a more profound way. Meanwhile, they're also studying the trades, being paid to train in carpentry or electrical, in part to be able to sustain their lives, which is a necessary aspect of growing in virtue. Now, those two things interconnect and interpenetrate in such a way as to build one another up into being good in a way that would otherwise not be possible. but they do so by being more uniquely themselves. And we can be more clear in our own mind, in our own vision, by knowing their ends. The contemplative life, the active life have different intermediate ends, ultimately for the singular end of knowing and loving God. But we need to know how they moderate those actions in the meantime.
I'm mostly over on the intellectual side now, of course, with schooling. But yeah, I love that the direction. As you were talking, it was reminding me of a Father Mike Schmidt's talk at one point, where he was differentiating training and working out, and says when somebody's training, there's a purpose. You're doing all of this for an end. The other is kind of doing things without, you know, you're just activity, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I like what you're saying there, that's like putting it in its proper order. So yes, man as an intellectual being certainly needs to develop that so that he can come to know and then love and serve God, right? Just as you're saying. But also this intentionality but we are here to work here as well, both to provide for a family, but to do good things. You know, from the beginning, man was set to work and work with his hands. So it seems like that's an important part of our nature as well, to be able
absolutely.
To
really... When God tells Adam in the garden to be fruitful and multiply and subdue the earth and have dominion over it, that he is not just giving him some sort of legal injunction saying these are the things that I'm requiring you to do. He's also revealing to Adam his true and profound nature. So this is not some sort of like two-tiered division between our material lives and our spiritual lives that don't interpenetrate with one another. They absolutely do. But they're two aspects of our lives that we need to understand profoundly so that we know how they integrate with one another. And we don't make mistakes like saying, go off and study philosophy so you can get a great job one day.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many different things that in my mind I want to go from there, because I was thinking even that's something that has always kind of needled me a little bit, because again, I love a lot of the Catholic education because of that aspect of getting that formation. But there's always been that sort of like, okay, but you're still doing it like most people are still doing that, like the brick and like the traditional public universities. They're still set up with the tenured professors and your big administration that's expensive, and you're reliant upon Catholic donors giving their money in order to keep the doors open. It's not a effective use of things. So there's that kind of brokenness, even though I love that aspect, but I love also that in your model that it's very intentional. You can't do that and accomplish what you're doing with the low tuition rates that you have and the getting these people out where they're not crippled by debt and learning something productive while also getting good formation. I love a lot of the intentionality that you've put into that.
Well, the model is intentionally Spartan. You know, you go to so many universities today and it's this, you know, 4-year vacation where you have some classes from time to time, and the places where you study and the places that you socialize and the places that you eat in and the places that you sleep in are all kind of handed to you from the same centralized organization. And that is, I think, one of the structural problems that has engendered this ongoing adolescence throughout college, is that this is actually a structural, practical problem as much as it is a spiritual problem. Again, these things interpenetrate one another. And so our decision to be integrated into a dilapidated Rust Belt town where students are responsible for maintaining their own homes and responsible for feeding themselves and responsible for figuring out how to be a social creature, in their early single years are really incumbent upon them as moving from child to adult. I mean, they're taking responsibilities, not only of yourself, which we talk about a lot. You got to dress well, you got to, you know, make your bed, all that stuff, which is very good, but it's also, you need to take care of others and your community as well, the things that you are utilizing. And in college, it's the same way with, you know, whether that's public or private school, is that you are taken out, extracted from a community and placed amongst people who are really just your same age. I mean, if you're a fourth grader, you're around 9 and 10 year olds. You know, if you're a, you know, you're a 12th grader, you're around 17, 18 year olds. And you don't have that much interaction during the most, you know, productive and energetic hours of the day around people older than you and people younger than you. And this is something that's obviously very new to human history and to educational history as well. This is a grand experiment that we've been on for the last 100+ years. And I'm not sure that it's necessarily the best one. Now, there's, of course, there's cause for it. And insofar as people around those ages are at the same intellectual caliber or ready for a series of different intellectual challenges that are roughly the same level. But to be able to then take that group and then bring them back into a community where there's those younger than them that they need to take care of, and much older than them that they need to take care of, and having some just a little bit older than them who help take care of them. I mean, that's actually more what a community is supposed to be. And it's only in that context that you become whom you are supposed to be, which is in part an adult. And if you don't have that opportunity, then you don't have that context, it's going to be harder to mature and grow as a fully formed adult human person.
You're certainly speaking our homeschooling. You're giving one of the homeschooling spiels right here. With we always get the people about socialization, you know, that sort of thing we're talking about. Mm-hmm. A properly formed homeschooling, you're getting, you've got siblings, you've got, and you're interacting at your parish, you're dealing with all. And so, I mean, you're just checking off our boxes here. Thank you for that, Jacob.
You got it. Surprise, yeah. Surprise. We homeschool ourselves. Yeah.
We have a lot of those conversations here in our house, kind of about how the can's getting kicked further down for adulthood as well. I mean, mm-hmm. back in the day when I was in high school, even in a public school, like the shop classes, the home ec, the, you know, learning how to balance your checkbook and even things like that were part of the high school career. It was just, they wanted to make sure those students knew how to do that when they were going out into the world. And I was talking with my kids, one of who is in college and the others going off next year, but it's like, oh, wait, I've forgotten to teach you some of those things because you've been here, and they're not going to learn those at college either. Mm-hmm. Because like they're going to be in the situation like you've described where it is that retreat. And I know they set it up that way because they said, well, we want the leisure to pursue this intellectual life and things. But there's also this setback where you're, it's like, oh, I went from home where mom and dad take care of everything to college where the college provides all the meals, they provide the housing, they clean the dorms, they do these things. And now they're going to jump from there. And all of a sudden it's okay, I'm responsible now for my housing and hopefully we're starting to, you know, we're giving them some of that information here before they can go off. But it's not at all built into the system. It's something that you have to force on it in addition to what's being done, and actually to counteract the bad habits that they're being kind of formed in like that, where, yeah. We used to get a lot of college students and bring them into our house because we lived close to a school, and they just love being around a family and such. But mm-hmm. I was realizing that.
Yeah. Again, let's take a moment for that. I mean, they long to be with a family again. Right. So,
yeah.
Yeah. But anyways.
No. Yeah. That was one of the things we were seeing. But what I was realizing is that on a weekend, it was like this was a Catholic school even, but there's like 200, 400 students there and probably like five adults on campus. So you've got 400 people between who have not been formed as adults yet without the mentors there to kind of help them know what to do, and they're left on their own. It's because it's a Catholic school, it's not like the Lord of the Flies sort of situation, but it's a little odd. It's like, I wonder how this came to be. And so again, the intentionality of breaking away from that sort of illogical model makes a lot of sense.
I think a large part of the problem has emerged through the changing nature of work, or what we think about work. You know, work, you know, is really an action that is a transformative in nature, where you're taking part of the world and you're changing it. And that's actually a very profound thing. But most of the time when we say work today, we think about jobs. When we think about jobs, we think about paychecks. And when we think about a good job, you think about a job that you think about a career path that you're kind of like interested in, like it's fun. You like enjoy it and it pays well. But if it didn't pay well, then you wouldn't be doing it. You know, so the work in and of itself is not the thing that draws you to a particular career, which is of course a problem. But the entire novelty, again, a new system that we're trying out of having careers that are not based at home and thus are very difficult to welcome your children into, is a real problem for the children themselves, because all of a sudden they're not having the opportunity to learn in the most intimate way possible with mom and dad how to actually become a mom or dad, right? The further that, you know, people talk about, you know, this question about whether or not moms should work outside of the home. And it's like, well, let's talk about whether dads should work outside of the home. You know, it's like the further when a dad gets in a car, and I do this every day, you know, so I'm a sitting hypocrite here. But, you know, if dad gets in a car and goes to the office, he's separating himself from his family and thus taking his best hours of every day and not welcoming up his children into that same life, raising them up, giving them the skills that they need to be able to provide for themselves in the way that he does. Again, this is a novel thing that we're playing with. You know, it's just a couple hundred years old, and something that the popes and their encyclicals, particularly at the turn of the 20th century, were warning us an awful lot about, is that when we are separating ourselves from our children, then the best sources of education that they have go out the door.
Yeah, boy, we could go down this one for quite a while. I think we're certainly seeing in today's world, we're seeing the effects of breaking away from that natural sort of order, like you're talking about there, with a family that's tight knit, where extended families stay in the same area together. There's a natural cycle to the day, to the seasons, to everything.
Yes.
We've broken all of that, and we're just, I think, starting to see the real consequences in our culture to what happens when we break that. It's good to see some return, some returning, or at least an awareness that we need to be aware of these things and turn our minds back to them and be intentional about them, even if we have to fight the system in order to do it. You know, but
right. No, I think the family is so fractured at this point that we don't even have an idea of what a healthy family looks like for most of us. And I think that returning to the true unity of the family is going to take us a long time to discover, because you only ever know the good by experience the good, and this knowing and doing good is this upward ascent and ultimately being good. But if we don't have these models in which we can view and also participate, then it's going to take a long time for us to actually figure out what being good is really all about. And so I love the trades as one small fix to one of the major problems of the breakdown of the family, and that's our transient society, which you just mentioned. I mean, most of the places where we live and work is not where we were born and raised. And in the trades, you have this almost a transient proof career. You know, the buildings need to be built here. Structures need to be erected here. You can't export that to Mexico or China, and it's not easy. There's no reason to centralize that production in New York or San Francisco. You know, it is widespread and widely distributed as in its own nature. It needs to be that. And so whereas so much of our society is moving all over the place, we have a lot of hope for our graduates who choose to take on that career in the trades, so they don't have to really put down roots in a place so that they can not only, you know, raise up their children and then move in with their children or have their children, you know, take care of them when they're old so that everybody's in the same place, but also you have friendships that become so intertwined and so powerful and robust that they begin to alleviate the need for all these impersonal structures and systems that we've created in our world that are completely unnecessary if only we loved a little bit better, which is what the sacraments empower us to do. It's not just a sentimental notion. This is actually, you know, society shifting and politically forming changes, you know, kind of to the tune of what Christianity did in the early church to that Greco-Roman pagan world. It's like, we don't need these structures. We don't need these systems because we actually have friendships that are so robust that we don't need them anymore.
Those trades seem to be such I love it because they seem to be such a great thing for, as you were saying, all for those things, but it's also for the human person. Just there's a dignity in all of those things that you're doing, that where they, it's not a, you know, we're out of the industrial age for the most part here. And, but how those engage the mind, how
we just sent that to other, out overseas. Yeah. We've taken on something else. We are now the managerial class here as in America. Yeah.
But the learning to kind of make something, there's a dignity in what you're producing. It involves the mind. It involves the entire person in doing those. And as you were saying, as you were talking about staying in that area, I mean, what a good thing that's going to be for a father to be able to drive around the town and say, that was one of my buildings there, or that's the place over. Yeah, because as you were talking about the transiency again, I was thinking about our property here in Arkansas, where neither my wife or from Arkansas, but I'm going to get ready to plant some trees, and I'm going to plant some hickory trees, and I'm realizing as planting those, though, that my children will never see the great hickory tree, most likely, because I'm transplanted. They're not likely to stay in the same area. Maybe some of them will, but it will be by some chance or God's providence that any of them end up right here in 100 years and see this big hickory tree that their grandfather, great grandfather, whatever, planted. You know, it just doesn't happen. But those trades actually have a permanency that gives you a tie as well to the actual community that way too. So
absolutely. You know, I heard this joke once. Actually, it's not a joke. It's just a funny truth. That the best time to plant trees is 30 years ago. And the second best time to plant trees is today. So yeah. Good on you for planting those hickory trees. That's some good wood too.
This is all very interesting. It gets me thinking about just kind of the dignity of work, which has already been raised, but thinking about the work we do as parents and whatever that looks like, and also the other aspects that make up what we would call work in quotes, whatever attitude we have toward our work today, how that comes to bear on our children and the work that we see them undertaking or hope they will undertake or anything like that. And the importance of considering all that you've been discussing on this broader level so that there is this coexistence of the intellectual and the practical and they're intertwined, and the value of work and the dignity therein. The point being to to really think deeply about the dignity of work, and as an antidote to perhaps that attitude, like the drudgery of it, or the
I think that's actually perfectly said. I mean, we might not be an ideal situation for work today in many ways, but the thing that's so important about it is something we do have control over, and that is our wills. Like, why am I doing this still? If it's not the ideal setting with working near my family, can I still will what I'm doing in the best manner possible so as to have my activity be one of self-giving in the context that I'm in? And hopefully we can move further and further away from this bad context that occasions sin more than virtue, and give something better to our children, that they might be able to have a life, a work, and in a community that might champion good work and good friendship more than the context that we found ourselves in. But choosing holiness and choosing self-giving in the context that we are, rather than just saying that these are means just for the end of eating, but actually finding, you know, the good when there is that in what we're doing. Sometimes that's not, we're not going to find that. We should just quit our jobs and do something else. But for those of us who don't have to do that, I think that is the holy mentality that we're called to have.
Well, the nice thing is, if you're keeping what you're talking about in mind, for me, is that because we know that God has a plan for us and has made us for more than just, whenever we talk about vocation, more than just being married or a priest or a religious or whatever, more, he's made us to be part of the kingdom, to bring our Lord to other people, to serve him, to love him. But he's also given us a lot of gifts along the way. So as long as we can keep what you're saying in mind, I've always, in my own experience, and I'd always advised some of my younger workers, it's like, this may not be where you're supposed to be, but if you do put everything that you have into it now, God will bless your work, and he probably has a reason for you to do what you're doing now. These skills, at least this has happened in my entire life, these skills will help you in 10 years when you finally are doing you're doing what God was calling you to do. You can feel that, see the fruits, and know that your work is worthwhile and it's just bringing in a paycheck. I know that doesn't necessarily happen for everybody, but for many it can. It might take that quitting, but sometimes it could just be the right door opens at the right time, and it's a switch. But
yeah,
and it's like what we're doing now is hopefully, at least I'll speaking personally, the choices I've made, that we have made for our family in the form of education we've undertaken for them, and what we're hoping to leave doors open to them to make decisions that will lead toward that growth in holiness and the formation of them as the people they're called to be, that they will have those options available to them.
Mm. Yes.
As you were talking about it, and I think it's just as things get kind of stuck together in my head, I was going back to that idea of, you know, whenever I talk about Colby's education or some of the educations we have, it's like, this, we're so blessed because this was this sort of thing that we have, the ability to go 18 years where you can spend that on education, and is a level of leisure that very few people would have had in other times. I mean, you would have to be wealthy, but I think I've seen right there is the poison is part of that too, from what you've been saying, Jacob, that that we're kind of training our minds to think we are the elite wealthy, but we're not. Even like in the times when you had to take care of your estates, that was your job. If you were wealthy and you could get this elite education, and your job was managing things to make sure that your estates were productive, we kind of adopted the first, but we've even thrown out the second. There's no responsibility inherent to what we're doing.
No, so that's brilliantly said. I mean, that's so true. You mentioned earlier that we were kind of in this post-industrialized age. And of course, that's true. Schooling arose during it. So there's some place to put kids after child labor laws came on the books and mom and dad are at the factory, and we've just carried that on. And so then there's the question of, well, why are we here? You know, why are we in the schooling context at all, for those who are in the current structure. And that is, for the most part, to be able to keep this managerial market class alive. That means, you know, we're sending off our marketing gurus so that people continue to buy whatever is on the market. We're sending data analysts into it, which is a really cool term, but ultimately that's just helping more people figure out how to help other people buy stuff, you know? So we are, for 90% of folks out there in these, you know, what you would usually think of as careers post-college, it really is in that in-between. We're not in that owner's position anymore. The average net worth of an American is in the negatives. And we talk about like ownership as things such as like ownership of homes, but homes are hardly productive property. I mean, I don't know how your home operates, but mine's a net loss every year. I mean, that's not the point of a home. A home is to be a place in which to nurture and raise a family. It's not a productive place in which you are finding economic freedom. You know, but our work is supposed to be a way in which we are cultivating the earth that God gave us in such a way as to make it more communal, more able for human habitation, human development, friendship to grow and blossom. But that demands that we have some sort of control over it. And we're not just the means in between, you know, capitalist producers and capitalist consumers. So I think that there's, you know, a good reason to sit down and figure out how to work something again, and to be able to find some sort of financial freedom that you're able to point at something and say, that's my own. I produce X out of it. I'm able to give this, share this with others in a way that's uniquely captures my image upon it, you know, which is the very basis of ownership, John Paul II teaches us. So I really do have a lot of hope for us to rediscover that in the next couple decades, because we're coming to a place of finally saying, I'm not sure that these current structures and these current systems are really making me happy. You know, I think there's a lot of depression going on, and there's many factors about it, but it's kind of high time that we start to rethink these structures that we live in.
I think from a prudential standpoint, the College of St. Joseph the Worker has chosen the perfect opportunity for all of these things that you're talking about, because I mean, we've talked about the value of the craft and making things, but there's also just a complete void. I mean, these are all occupations that are going to be needed always. And there's a complete void of great workers, great craftsmen that are out there. And I always have this story that, you know, my experience with workers, contractors, were often like, whenever there's a break, the beer comes out, the cigarettes are out, there's bad language and things. And then my parents had this, they were doing some renovations in their home, and they hired a contractor who was a Christian guy with a bunch of Christian guys working for him. Mm-hmm. And they would sing hymns while they were working. And it, I mean, their work was beautiful as well. So it wasn't just that they were Christians and did shoddy work, but high level of work, but they were also kind of evangelizing just in their, you know, and they were competent, you know, because they weren't, the drinking drugs, and they were, you know, so both having the good formation, filling that gap where there just aren't enough people right now doing those things, but also then bringing this, the dignity and joy of work so that people can see that is also in itself valuable and needed by our society.
Yeah, that's such a great story. I think in the new evangelization, so many people have overlooked evangelizing the people that Christ first brought the gospel to, which is probably his co-workers on job sites, you know, and to be able to go out and say, you know, this is a life that the person we worship actually led, you know, let's figure out why. I think that's marvelous. I think there's also a kind of a, you know, great consideration too, when as you're pointing out, like the quantity problem in the trades, like it's really hard to find good workers today. I mean, that's just true. And that's just a numbers problem. You know, there are three people retiring from the skilled trades for every one that's going into them each year. That is bad numbers. And if we want to, you know, rebuild this country again, then we have to have people who actually know how to physically build in this country again. But at the College of St. Joe's the Worker, we're primarily, you know, focused on the quality problem rather than the quantity problem. If you have a quantity problem, you're inevitably going to have a quality problem as well. There's not going to be the same number of people that have taken the time to acquire the more subtle and dynamic skills that have taken years and years to cultivate. And that's certainly true. People are forgetting how mass masonry works. We're forgetting how timber framing works. We hardly know how to do dry stone foundations or walls anymore. The things that we all go to Europe and marvel at, you know, the things that actually make your soul sing and want to be around them. And to be able to not only fill job sites with laborers, but job sites with leaders is a major goal of ours, to make sure that good, holy people are leading men, leading crews, so that they not only know how to enhance the dignity of a good work that they've been given, but also to see that work as a ladder to God himself. And this is, you know, the head and the hands being formed together as rungs of a ladder by which we ascend to the great craftsman himself.
So going back just a bit to the time that students will spend at the College of St. Joseph the Worker, let's talk a bit about the student life, their time there, the community aspect among the students. What will that look like?
Well, our school is days are going to be extremely rigorous. I mean, our students are, for the first year, going to be in our workshop training about 21 hours every week. Meanwhile, they'll be taking significant classes in sacred scripture and sacred tradition throughout that time. And so to be able to balance all that is going to be very impressive when they pull off. So this is not a program for people that think, well, maybe college is not for me. This is very much for people that think that college is absolutely in their future. So our program really revolves around kind of that same dance that was found in the early monasteries, the life praying in the chapel, the life studying in the library, and the life working in the fields, only for us, we'll be working in the workshop. And that dance between the chapel, the library, and the workshop is really going to be the daily dance of our students here. So there's 3 years, to just give a general overview of the programs. It's to earn your BA degree usually takes about 4 years, hopefully. To become a journeyman in various states takes around 4 or 5 years, depending on which state you're from. In our program, we take those what would otherwise be 8 or 9 years and compress it into a 6-year program. So the first 3 of those years are here in Steubenville, Ohio, where our students will be studying theology, studying their trade, and also practicing it as well. And for practicing it, they are paid as for that work that they contribute. The next 3 years, we send them home or to the state that they want to land in permanently. And we do that for a number of reasons. But a big one is that we want to ensure that they are in the community, giving themselves to the people that they want to be with sooner rather than later. So rather than going off to school for 4 years, we want to send them home a year sooner. And during those next 3 years of the program, their studying in theology takes an online platform, and their studying in the trades has to be an in-person platform. You can't build a house virtually very well. And that they will be placing them with master craftsmen who are within our St. Joseph's network. So these are people that have been thoroughly vetted for the quality of their craftsmanship as well as the quality of their character, so that we know that our students are going to be continually raised up as skilled tradesmen and as good Christian men and women. Now, in terms of the housing that you mentioned earlier, our housing will be extremely affordable, because we really want our students to take care of all the things that a homeowner would take care of. So that means utilities, that means insurance, usually it'd mean taxes, but these are homes all in the name of the college. So 501c3s get off the hook for property tax, but also maintenance as well. So there'll be a very, very light maintenance fee that we will tack on as well, but it won't even come to us as a college. That's something that that we will train and teach our students to be able to pool together, collect together, and take care of together, so that they build up these habits of ownership, which means habits of responsibility, sooner rather than later.
I mean, a lot of people have ideas about starting a college. You know, you'd get an idea and you'd say, oh, I want to do this thing. But the first time I think I talked to you, what stood out to me was how well thought out and how put together a lot of things are. And I can't imagine how difficult it was to kind of come up with this vetted network of contractors, in addition to all of the pricing, housing, all of these things. What has that been like?
Well, you know, in some ways it's easier than you would think, because everybody is hurting for good apprentices. I was just talking to somebody last week, and he was saying that he's tried to have apprentices, and it's a very, you know, very enviable position as an apprentice, because not only get paid the train, but they're paying your way through school as well. And that's, you know, not something you take lightly. And he said nobody would take the program, you know, nobody would stick through with it. And so they are really excited to have people who usually wouldn't think about the trades now as real options for apprentices. You know, the person that would otherwise go to, you know, a good Catholic school or even an elite institution to study the humanities, to actually say, yeah, I do want to do that. I want to study at an elite level, the humanities, but I also want to be a plumber. You know, that is something that's really hasn't been seen for a while. And so people have been, the network has been growing rapidly at a pace, precisely because people are so excited to be able to have these very intelligent, well-trained apprentices. But of course, on our side, I'd say that the evaluation on the current quality of craftsmanship is something that we take a really serious look at, because you might be a great guy and a really good husband and father, but your training in the trades wasn't really all that great. Now, I get to say this as the non-tradesman of our team, right? So my quality control is really hurting on this, but Mike Sullivan definitely has the authority to be able to make these judgments. He's our president, and what a marvelous man and what a fabulous craftsman he is.
So if there are folks listening who would be interested in being a part of that network, mm-hmm. are you accepting applications for that, or how?
Absolutely. They can email Michael Gugala at the College of St. Joseph the Worker, michael@collegeofstjoseph.com, okay. Who is on the administrative side, putting that list together before Mike and his team of craftsmen goes out and vets everyone. So if somebody's interested in being part of that network, we would really be excited about viewing your application.
I would have loved to, even at my age, would love to go that first year and just learn even the introductions to the trades that you're getting there. And I'm guessing that there's a growing population of people that even that at least would like to get a sample of that first year and what a valuable thing even that would be, but hopefully to stick it through.
You know what? It's true. I think a lot of people are, I mean, I hear this all the time from our donors and supporters, man, I just want to go to college again. And quite honestly, I want to go to undergraduate again. we've tried to set up some shorter programs exactly for people like you and like me, courses spanning from 1 week to 1 month, all of which have a theology component and all of which have a trades component. So if somebody is interested in doing that, they're most welcome to come. Prospective students, that might be a good way of getting to know us as well. So it spans everything from introduction to home ownership, which is accompanied along with a course on the theology of the domestic church, which is really quite a thrill and so freeing and wonderful to study. But also, you're going to be able to take care of your house in a way that you haven't before afterwards. You know, the average call to a plumber is like $500. The average call to an electrician is $400. Save that money. Do it yourself. Having more skills is always an asset. It's never a liability. That's a good way to get going here in Steubenville. Things like timber framing is also available. Timber framing is really, if you want to know the type of carpentry that Jesus and St. Joseph got up to, that's what it was, this old-fashioned mortise and tenon carpentry in which these structures, great structures, are put together and still standing. They're 1,000-year-old homes. Again, trades that are being lost to history that we are desperately clinging on to for dear life to ensure that there are really stable homes out there. And I'm not just talking structurally, it's structural longevity, but aesthetic longevity as well. We had so many people, a surprising number of engineers actually come out for these classes last year. And we hope to continue to welcome cohorts every summer to be able to build beautiful buildings with us here in Steubenville.
Our show notes will have a link to your website and the Mike Aquilina episode I referenced earlier and other links relevant to things that have come up during the course of this conversation. Jacob, what a pleasure to meet you today and visit with you. I really wish you all the best. We'll be thinking of you, especially on the Feast of St. Joseph the Worker, May 1st, and of course on Joseph, Husband of Mary in March. And thank you so much for visiting with us. Please do keep in touch.
Thank you so very much. We covet your prayers through this process. We're, all of this has gotten going through St. Joseph putting his shoulder into it. So we're very grateful to him and to all those who have buoyed us up spiritually.
Subscribe to the ColbyCast on your favorite podcast app so that you don't miss an episode. And let us know how we're doing by leaving a rating or a review. And as always, feel free to email us at podcast@colby.org.
Mary, our Mother, pray for us. St. Maximilian Kolbe, St. Ignatius of Loyola, holy saints and angels, pray for us. Ad Maiorem Dei Gloriam.